Many a participant in a wedding, we're talking about the main participants, has said words to the effect of, it just feels right. But our lovey-dovey brains need to team up with our critical thinking brains when it comes to long-term relationships. Our next guests devised a system for applying some pressure to a relationship before it becomes a permanent commitment. Jill Andres and Brooke Silva Braga wrote The Marriage Test, Our 40 Dates Before I Do. And as the subtitle says, it's a series of dates or stress tests, if you will, for figuring out how well you'll work through some common issues in a long-term relationship. Jill Andres is a business consultant on the line with us. Jill, thanks for joining us.
Great to be here.
And Brooke Silva Braga is here, too. He's a journalist and filmmaker. Jill watches Real Housewives. Brooke does not. Hi, Brooke.
That is true. I have still not watched an episode.
Okay, so there's clearly some differences still existing between you. That's fine. You know, opposites attract. You begin at the end in the book. Now, 4 years in, you actually ended this relationship, Brooke. Why?
Well, I think belatedly, Jill and I realized that our relationship was not working and was not likely to work. And it was a really hard truth to swallow because we loved each other. We were, you know, as they say, best friends. And we lived together. And I think like a lot of couples, you know, your lives become so entwined that it can be really hard to admit that maybe you aren't right for each other over the long term. And that really, as you said, the book kind of picks up with us reflecting back on having broken up, having got back together, and kind of being afraid of making the same mistake twice.
And it's not just you. Now, Jill, I'm going to buffer your language a little bit here for the radio, but you still think we're totally crap at pairing off as a species?
Some of us. You know, I think that there's a lot of pressure that's out there for you to find someone and settle down, and I think a lot of times people end up with someone who maybe isn't the best fit for them over the long term. And so that type of pressure, I think, really makes it tough for us to make those smart decisions.
Jill, how long were you apart, and what actually brought you back together?
So, you know, we were broken up for about a year or so, maybe even a little bit more. And I think the beauty of that breakup is that we actually both thought that we really weren't going to get back together. We truly broke up. We started seeing other people. You know, I tried to move away, went on a long trip. And so when, you know, months later, Brooke and I reconnected at a party like with some mutual friends. There was still that chemistry between us. There was still that interest between us. And it kind of started us talking again for the first time in, you know, a year or so. That kind of brought us back down the path of spending time together and then ultimately trying to date again.
Whose voices were the loudest? Was it friends and family saying, oh, God, no, or the ones in your own heads?
I think it was mainly our initial idea, but then as soon as we mentioned to friends and family that we had this idea, you know, we had this kind of eureka moment. We describe it on the book where we were out, you know, kayaking together after work, and we kind of had this germ of an idea, and we got out of the kayak with, I don't know, 5 or 10 ideas, and immediately started telling friends and family, and everyone had their own idea. Everyone, whether they were married or divorced or single, thought they knew the test we had to, you know, take to be sure. And so before we knew it, we had 40 of these things, and it took us a year to finish them all.
Jill, I gather from what you guys write in the book that a lot of what set the process in motion of getting you back together in any way, shape, or form, though, was there was a lot of honesty in the breakup talk that hadn't existed in the relationship.
That's so true. And I think, honestly, that happens for a lot of couples. You know, things that are truly toxic and truly are tearing a relationship apart, those are the things you don't want to talk about. And so often that's what comes to the surface either right before a breakup or during a breakup. So for us, it was almost like when we decided to split, we laid all our cards out on the table. We knew, both of us understood what were the problems the other person saw and why it didn't seem like it was going to work. So it was nice when we kind of came back together and reentered each other's lives. We knew kind of where to start and what to make sure really truly was different this time.
So, Brooke, there are 40 dates to the marriage test. Basically, 40 dates before I do is the subtitle of the book. So we know how many parts there are to this. So is this the kind of test where you kind of know yourself where you're heading once you've gone through a few of these? Or is there something like a passing grade, a certain percentage you have to hit?
I don't think it is. And we didn't approach it as such a like a clinical, mathematical equation. I think it's something you sort of feel. And I think, you know, now having done them all, I think we really liked the things we chose and that our friends and family and we came up with. I think the most important thing, like, you, someone else could, like, come up with different tests, and I think it would probably work just as well. I think what was really useful about what we did is we managed to stress, like, a lot of different areas. We did, you know, a money date where we actually traded credit cards for a month. We could only spend the other person's money. And that really, not only the activity was really useful, but the conversations that, like, grew out of that and kind of the hard choices we had to make about how we would handle money if we were to join it and get married. And I can run down a few of the categories. It's not surprising stuff. You know, it's trust, kids, in-laws, communication. And with each category, we just tried to find ways to really force us to have these uncomfortable conversations.
Are any of them, did you think of these as any more important than any others? I mean, the ones on money come before sex because money is more important than sex, or what?
That's a good question. I think we believed that there were probably a handful of areas that we had to at least get a passing grade on. That, you know, you mentioned sex. There had to be some level of both, you know, physical compatibility and, you know, interest in pushing that forward. When it came to money, I think we had to have at least some of the same values and ideas around it. And then a lot of the times it was just about being able to make the right choices together to move forward.
All right, back with Jill and Brooke and the marriage test in a minute here on the Jefferson Exchange. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guests today are Jill Andres and Brooke Silva Braga, married couple. They had gone together for 4 years, broke up, still liked each other, got back together, and devised some tests for themselves, 40 dates before they get to I Do. That became their book, The Marriage Test, which we're talking about right now. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So Brooke mentioned the general categories of trust, money, kids, sex, in-laws. Those are the first five. There are many more. Jill, did you start with the hardest? Because I can't imagine what it'd be like to watch your partner speed dating.
You know, that was definitely, I think, one of the dates I most dreaded before we did it. And, you know, it was no mistake that we did start with trust. We had broken up before. Trust was an element of the breakup. And so, you know, kind of tackling speed dating, tackling whether or not there were other people out there that were capturing our attention, really was kind of, you have to pass that hurdle before you can even worry about, hey, do we both want kids? Hey, are we on the same page about finances? So going speed dating was definitely terrifying before we kind of set foot in the room. But ultimately, by the end, you know, we both met some great people, but I was certainly the most excited to go have dinner with Brooke afterwards, and I know he felt the same.
Brooke, how did speed dating lead you to think of ghost crabs? I'm still trying to figure this one out.
Oh, well, yes, you're getting into kind of the weeds of the book, but I'm happy you did. It's not every interview where the person has even read the book.
True.
So it's a treat. So I can explain the ghost crab thing a little bit. This was an experience I had as a kid down off the coast of Savannah, Georgia. And we went on this wildlife night thing where, you know, on this island off the coast of Savannah, these turtles would nest. And the wildlife ranger explained that they had to protect the baby hatchlings as they went to the water because these ghost crabs would kill the hatchling, take a bite of it, realize the hatchling tasted bad, but the hatchling was dead, and then they would just go kill another, not remembering that the first experience hadn't been a good one. And I kind of compare that to at least my experience, and I don't think I'm alone. A lot of young men, I think, pursue women not even really fully understanding why they're doing it, and doing it in a way that ultimately isn't satisfying, but there's some compulsion that I think is familiar to a lot of us that just convinces us that we should try to find more people to meet and be with, even if it's not ultimately satisfying. And
wow.
I think
so. Nobody gets bitten and dies, but at least, but you do get the impression that, yeah, this is like, okay, why did I do that again?
Yeah, why did I do that again? And can I be better than a damn ghost crab?
All right. So test number two is the phone swap, which is that's another big test of trust. How nerve-wracking was this at the outset, Jill?
I was in some ways very nervous because, of course, you're scared of what you might find. But Brooke and I had been so open and so honest post-breakup, and he was very willing to hand over his phone. So I think I was feeling pretty good about this experiment. What was interesting is that very quickly it became less about me kind of hunting through his phone and trying to find evidence of malfeasance. And instead, it became more of a feeling of, I don't really like that Brooke is reading all of my own private thoughts. I didn't have anything to hide, but I still sent emails to my girlfriends or to my family, maybe saying things that should be private and that Brooke didn't really have a right to read. And so coming out of this date, Brooke and I had a really honest discussion where we said, you know what, for some couples, snooping is a part of their relationship. For us, privacy is really important, and we're just going to have to trust that the other person, is following the rules and being right by us.
And then you move on to number three, meet the exes. What is the purpose of meeting the exes, Jill?
Well, you know, we all have patterns in life, and what we wanted to do was spend a little bit of time, you know, getting to know some of the people who were really important to who we became as the relationship partners that we are today. And we also wanted to say, hey, are there any patterns, maybe scary or positive, that we should know about our partner that maybe we don't see? We have sort of those rose-colored glasses on. So we went out with my high school sweetheart, who still lived in my hometown in Napa, California. And then we also went out with Brooke's ex, who was living in the Washington, D.C. area. And this was a woman that he dated a bit after college. And in fact, Brooke, you probably have some thoughts you'd like to share about that date.
Well, yeah, no, the ex's date was intense for me on both sides because first, as Jill mentioned, we went out with her high school boyfriend who in the many years since insisted he had never found anyone nearly as good as Jill. And I was almost worried he might, you know, pass her a note secretly as we walked out or something. I wasn't sure how that one was going to end. And then a couple weeks later, we go out with my ex-girlfriend, and it's the entire opposite experience. She goes on and on about how her husband is so much better than me in all the ways that I was never able to live up to him. And that was not so much fun.
Wow. And so we're talking to Jill Andres and Brooke Silva Braga about the marriage test, their scheme for 40 dates to test your relationship before you get to the altar. Now, as if trading phones and meeting exes wasn't daunting enough, now we get to the trading credit cards that you mentioned earlier, Brooke. How did you structure this one?
You know, we tried to make it as simple as possible. We literally handed each other our credit cards and said, this will be the only thing we use to buy anything for the next month. And then the other thing we did is we also gave each other just a little bit of cash for those purchases that you can't make with on a credit card for whatever reason. And it was way easier than we thought. No one checks to see if you're actually using your own credit card. It didn't happen once. But then at the end, and also what we did is we didn't let ourselves or we asked, you know, each other not to check our statements. So we didn't know what the other person was spending. And it was really surprising, I think, to both of us how emotional it was to spend someone else's money. I found it pretty difficult at first. I overcame it, but Jill, also, I think for even longer than me, felt just weird buying things. And then at the end of the month, we had a really productive conversation about, you know, how we would want to divvy up money if we were to get married, because we had spoken to so many, you know, friends who were married who still had separate accounts, and we had trouble understanding why until we went through that month.
So, Jill, did you have a change in your approach partway through the credit card swap month?
Well, you know, as Brooke was saying, it was actually really emotional and strange to spend someone else's money. So at first I had this perspective where I'm like, I'm going to really, you know, tighten my belt. I'm going to watch my spending. I'm going to impress Brooke. You know, I'm going to show him that I don't need a lot of money to get by. And then, you know, on like day four, I didn't have lunch at work. I needed to buy something. And then there we go. You know, I've spent $10 or something. So my approach really quickly switched from I want to impress him to being like, wait, the purpose of this date is to show each other how we really truly do spend and to experiment with what that feels like. So I did transition into buying expensive hair conditioner again pretty soon.
Oh, so you've been frugal in the first part of the month.
I tried to, and you know what? Life catches up.
Got to have that conditioner. So,
yeah.
So what other kinds of money tests? It seems like that would have been the hardest one. What other kinds of money tests did you throw each other?
Well, you know, the next date we did right after was another tough one. This was another month where we were experimenting about how we do with money. And this time around, what we decided to do is spend half of what we normally do for an entire month. So we were kind of on a budget together for the first time. And I actually went into that thinking, this isn't going to be so hard. You know, Brooke and I have lived for many years not making a ton of money and, you know, scrounging around for deals and being just fine. But very quickly into that date as well, you know, my eyes were open to just how much this type of pressure can get to a couple. You know, we were really out of sync. We weren't really getting along as well as we usually do. In fact, I was starting to feel like it's kind of like our old patterns of our relationship coming back. And by the end of the month, we actually succeeded. So we spent less than half of what we normally do. But it gave us an opportunity to be really honest and saying, I feel like something's off with us. What's going on? And to make that be like a safe space to be able to say that.
All right. As if money wasn't hard enough, then you move on to kids. You got dates with kids. And Brooke, I, from the very beginning of the book, it sounds like you're concerned a kid might not survive a weekend with you two.
I wasn't sure. I knew that I thought we both wanted kids. One of the things that comes up in that discussion is Jill seems to be more ambivalent about it than I first thought. But yeah, our first kids date was we took care of 9-month-old Jack for 24 hours. His parents were nice enough to hand him over. I think free babysitting is pretty attractive to a new parent. And it was both really encouraging to see, you know, how great Jill was with kids, which wasn't a surprise to me. But the thing that did come up that I don't think ever would have come up until we actually had kids or really had to take care of one over, more than just a couple hours, was that I felt Jill was really bossy around the kid. She seemed to know or think she knew everything that needed to happen, and I felt like a little like I was getting pushed into the background. And so we had a conversation about, so what if this was our kid? Like, is this really the way that you think we're going to run things? And she didn't feel that she had been that way. So it was a really helpful conversation to have now, because from what I hear from all our friends who already do have kids, it's a fight that is bound to come up when the little one is ours.
So, Jill, how formal a debriefing did you guys give each other after each of the tests were over, or were the results so blatantly clear to each of you that they didn't need a debrief?
You know, it kind of depended. So, like, in certain dates, you know, for example, we did a date where we showed each other the full universe of finances that we had, so, like, all of our bank accounts, and we were kind of just making sure neither of us had, like, hidden debt or were concealing some reality of our financial past. That was kind of like we did the date, and the date itself was the conversation, so there wasn't a lot of debrief to do. But other dates, like the ones with the kids, you know, it required a lot of conversation afterwards, because Brooke was totally right. He shared with me, Jill, I felt like you were being condescending and trying to really run the show, and if we were to become parents, I'd want it to be a partnership. And I at first didn't really appreciate it or understand it, and so it was almost like multiple days of kind of talking about it until we were finally able to come to a place where I understood and heard him and really had time to reflect on, could I be that type of parent that he's looking for?
Jill Andrews and Brooke Silva Braga are married now, but they were together for 4 years, broke up, got back together, and thought, you know, we need to put ourselves through some tests here. So they devised the marriage test. That's their book, subtitled Our 40 Dates Before I Do. So back to the baby section. Now, this is an interesting one. The random alarm test doesn't involve any actual children here. How did you set that one up, Brooke?
So we wanted to get a sense of what it would be like to have the sleep deprivation of new parenthood. So we vowed for a week to never let ourselves sleep for more than 3 straight hours. So we set an alarm. Actually, we tried to set a random alarm so it would wake us up at an unknown interval. And the thing just didn't work. I mean, the one we got online was just junky. So then we just started waking ourselves up every 2.5-3 hours. And so when we woke up, we would have to do an activity. We had like a hat of crummy chores to do, the laundry, make a meal, organize the cabinets. That week was, it was difficult.
I can imagine. And so, which prompts the question then, and it maybe not in the kid category, but in any one of these many categories that you had these tests in, which was the one that appeared to put the biggest strain on you two, Jill?
Well, you know, I mentioned the budget crunch one where we lived on half of what we normally did. That was a really tough, scary one just because it came so early in our test and it seemed like it was affecting us so much. A second one that ended up being surprisingly difficult was a date that we did to kind of test our intimacy and like sexual compatibility. And we did it in a weird way. We said for a month or for a week, we are not going to physically touch each other at all. So no hugging, no holding hands, no running into each other as we brush up in the hallway. And what we thought it might say is, you know, oh, physical affection is important to us, or, you know, maybe it actually builds a little bit more desire. But in reality, we ended up having one of the biggest fights that we've had of our whole relationship. And it was almost impossible to actually move on from the fight when you couldn't physically hug someone or couldn't physically hold their hand and say, this is going to be okay. This isn't as big of a deal as it seems like it's coming out. And so this date was really, really scary because it was a moment of, are we right for each other? You know, should we continue on in this test and keep moving forward? And in some ways, I'm very grateful that this fight came up when we couldn't touch because we had to keep talking about it. We kept going deeper and deeper into it without being able to kind of rely on what we normally do, which would, you know, hold each other's hand and cry a little and then hug and it would be over.
Yeah, so no makeup sex to make you feel better after this.
Exactly.
One,
for sure. Yeah. And we had a pretty big fight. We couldn't get out of it. Kind of until like a few days later when the date was done and we were actually able to hold hands again and cuddle.
So it sounds like you guys were pretty good about holding to any rules you might have laid down beforehand, which was when the test is on, the test is on. You can't call time out and say, let's just hug for a little while or something.
Yeah, we were pretty strict about it. When we set down our rules, we abided by them.
So how much did you push your own and each other's comfort zones in the sex dates? This sounds like this was a major issue for you in the first phase of your relationship before the breakup.
Yeah, so we did two dates that actually really did kind of push us, particularly in the sense of being honest with each other and sharing with each other feedback that we would otherwise rather probably not share. For example, one date for a week, we kind of, you know, were intimate with each other. And then at the end of that week, we came together and both shared feedback. So, you know, I shared some things that I'd been keeping inside for a long time, and Brooke did the same. And what was great about this date is it forced us to have conversations about things we'd rather ignore, but it did put like a nice sort of protective like layer around it. It was okay. It was safe. This is like what the date is designed to do. And then actually right after that, we went into a week where we every single day had to have sex, but it had to be some sort of different kind of sex. So that was one where we were pushing ourselves in a very different way, much more physical than kind of like the emotional and psychological component of sexual chemistry.
You know, a lot of this, and certainly in the sex section, is going to be the two of you and the two of you alone. But I wonder how much you allowed yourselves to flail and how much you sought out some professional help with things like communication and honesty and stuff like that. Did you work with any counselors, social workers, whatever?
We did do a date where we went to couples counseling, and we went to a couple sessions of that. I think one of the core premises of the project, which people can agree or disagree with, is that on some level we all know from our experience, from our families, from our friends, the things that trip up couples, and we've talked about them throughout this conversation, and that what we really tried to do with the help of our family and friends was just find novel ways to force us to have these conversations. And I think, I mean, obviously most couples are not going to do most of these 40 crazy dates we did. They're certainly welcome to, and, you know, they can find them online, and we're happy to have them try them. But I think the main thing that we were going for, and that we do hope other couples consider seriously, is that it is an important time to test your relationship and be really honest about it. At the same time, it's so hard to be honest because your lives are so entwined that it's hard to have these conversations and face these concerns. But whether you do it exactly how we did or some other way, we hope that people do think about, you know, how they make that important decision.
And you probably noticed that I can attest to this being married for more than 30 years now. You do test each other continually throughout a marriage as well.
Yeah, and, you know, it's funny, you know, Brooke and I actually have now been married a little over a year. We wrote the book, obviously, before we were married. And we've actually found ourselves going back and doing some of these dates because what we realized is a lot of them are actually not only tests of whether or not you're good together, but they're almost like relationship strengthening tests. So it's a great opportunity not just for us to continue to be you know, focus on keeping ourselves healthy, but it could be also a nice guide for some other couples who are thinking about that over the long term.
Well, you straddle a line between between fun and serious in the marriage test, our 40 dates before I do. Jill Andreessen and Brooke Silva-Braga, thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.